Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. Glad to be joining everybody back in this new year. Tonight, we're going to be bringing you a different show. You've heard us speak of workers' compensation. You've heard us talk about how the system works internally, how things are going when it works right. Tonight, we're going to have a different discussion about workers' comp, about when things don't go so right, when somebody's gaming it. Tonight, we're talking about workers' compensation fraud. And with me, I have some very experienced and talented guests to explain what happens, how the system works. Both appearing courtesy of the District Attorney's Office for San Mateo County, we have Inspector Brendan Bart Bartholomew. Bart has served in law enforcement since 2008, first with the San Jose and later the San Mateo Police Departments, where he worked as a patrol officer, a training officer, detective, and later as a supervisor. In 2024, he joined the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, where he investigates criminal worker exploitation and workers' compensation and insurance fraud across San Mateo County. Brendan was recently awarded the San Mateo County District Attorney Inspector of the Year Award for his work in the Workers' Compensation Fraud Division. Also joining us, courtesy of the District Attorney's Office in San Mateo County, is Deputy District Attorney Aaron Fitzgerald. Aaron is a Deputy District Attorney where he's served since 2001. I've banged heads with him most of that time. Actually, I was there a few years before across the Alps, but Aaron is a graduate of UC Davis and the University of San Francisco School of Law, where he's handled approximately, well, it says you've handled 60. I think I'm good for at least 12 or 15 of those. But Aaron's handled about 60 jury trials, has served in nearly every assignment within the office, including sexual assault, domestic violence, gangs, the juvenile division, and has prosecuted a wide variety of felony and misdemeanor cases, and cases involving complex fraud cases. He's previously served as a deputy in charge of the Northern Branch, that is in South San Francisco, and managing other attorneys. He presently serves as the prosecuting attorney for the Workers' Compensation Insurance Fraud Division. And without further ado, Aaron Bart, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Guests are all of you, so give us a call. Our phone number right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, you can call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about workers' comp fraud, whether it's the guy you see who's collecting benefits while racing off to the gym, pumping weights and wrestling, or maybe it's your boss who didn't go out and get the insurance. Whatever it is, you have a question for us. You don't have to be at the exact moment we are. Again, that number is 415-841-4134. And if you want to call us toll-free, we'll pick up the freight at 866-798-8255. And as we're getting set up, we have a couple of audio problems, but as we're getting set up, let me take a moment and talk to you about next week's program. Next week, we are experimenting with a completely different kind of broadcast. It's a one-week hiatus. We'll be recording in front of a live audience at our other studio on Montgomery Street, 220 Montgomery, We will have live audience, people from the community, to hear all about our broadcast on immigration and what's happening right now and what you can do about it. Whatever side of the issue you are, we would love to hear from you. But we would love to hear from you in studio. Record live on Tuesday night. On Wednesday, we'll be playing that back. We've never tried that before. We have fantastic guests. We have Bill Hing, the founder of the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, currently running the clinic at USF. We have Carla Gomez, who has been both a defense attorney extraordinaire and immigration attorney. We have quite the show in store. So do join us. But for tonight, it's all about workers' comp, and I understand that you guys can now hear us, and we can hear you. So welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Great. Thanks so much for having us, Jeff, and it's good to be on your program again.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
You know, let's start with the basics. Can you tell us a little bit about workers' comp? Maybe you could give a bit of an overview about why workers' comp really matters.
Will do. As a prosecutor for San Mateo County, I've come to realize that workers' compensation law and a fraud prevention is one of the most important systems protecting California's workforce and our economy. It ensures that employees who are injured on the job receive prompt medical care and wage replacement. It protects employers from civil lawsuits. And when the system works properly, it benefits both workers, employers, and our community. When it's abused or ignored, the costs are borne by everybody through either higher insurance premiums, there's unfair competition. It also affects taxpayers, the sum of billions of dollars throughout the United States and significantly in California.
So let's back up just a little bit. You said a couple of things that are interesting, but one of them is you mentioned unfair competition. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Sure, Jeff. Normally, employers, for example, have an obligation to insure any employees who work for them with very limited exceptions. If an employer does not pay the workers' compensation insurance to protect their workers, they, in essence, are creating a financial benefit to their company. And so there's less cost out the door, so to speak. So other rival companies that might be in the same industry who are following the law, protecting their workers, are at a unfair competitive disadvantage because of the expenses and obligations of providing insurance for their employees. So in essence, it's creating an unfair competitive disadvantage for those that are fraudulently avoiding paying insurance.
So some guy comes in, makes a bid on a roof that's 20%, 30% lower than the next guy because he's not paying for workers' comp. Looks all good to me until somebody falls off my roof.
Exactly. That's a great point, Jeff. And a lot of people don't think about it when they are hiring people to do work, whether it be construction or looking at kind of the bottom dollar, which is understandable. But sometimes that bottom dollar is being achieved through, not always, but there are instances, unfortunately, where that bottom dollar that's lower is being accomplished through fraud.
So tell us about just what workers' compensation is and why it exists.
So why it matters, I'll give you a few examples. Some of the key benefits of the workers' compensation system, if you're an employee that's injured, is you're entitled to medical treatment, any reasonable and necessary medical care to cure or relieve the effects of your injury. You're entitled also to wage assistance, either temporary disability, the time off that you're off due to the injury, or permanent disability, which is compensation for any permanent impairment or loss, you know, future earnings that you can't earn any longer. There's also additional benefits for employees, such as job displacement benefits, so retraining skills, or vouchers. And tragically, if someone were to pass away as a result of an injury, there was also death benefits for dependents of workers who die from a work-related injury. So those are some of the benefits for employees in the workers' compensation system. Employers also receive a benefit. So workers' compensation protects law-abiding employers from lawsuits, provides a predictable system where people know, given the number of employees, the type of work that they do, how a company has performed in the past, and also, you know, kind of what a payroll is for a particular company. They have predictability for insurance. It also ensures fair competition when everybody's playing by the same rules. Employers who comply shouldn't be undercut by those that are breaking the law. And for the broader community, unfortunately, fraud and noncompliance increases insurance premiums, and ultimately that shifts the taxpayers and undermines trust in the system. And we all have those horror stories in the workers' compensation system. We want to be able to direct money to those that are injured that need it. And fraud and games playing affects and harms those that really need the benefit of the workers' compensation system.
Who's covered under California law? Who's covered under workers' comp law?
Any employee who has a bona fide employee-employer relationship should be covered by the law. And the system is designed to really protect the employee, a no-fault system to the employee. So if an employee is legitimately injured or becomes ill at work, the workers' comp insurance system is supposed to step in and cover them.
Is it any kind of employee?
Yeah, any employee should be covered. So we deal a lot with construction industry, but even full-time employees domestically in somebody's home should be covered by a workers' comp insurance policy.
So the office manager who answers the phone and does the booking would be covered by it, just as would the person who climbs on the roof?
Yes, and what we'll probably talk about a little bit later is that how you classify your employees is one way to engage in fraud within the workers' compensation system for those people engaging in fraud. If you reclassify more dangerous positions that are more likely to receive an injured worker as a less dangerous position, it's a way to lower your insurance premiums. And I'm sure we'll get to that in a bit, but workers are typically classified in based upon codes as determined by the state of California and workers' compensation system. Much like if you have a family and you have different aged children or family members and you're trying to insure them, insurability is based upon potential risk factors, similarly with employees in California.
So somebody climbing up ladders are more likely to fall and break a leg than the lady who's in the office answering the phones or the guy who's vacuuming at night.
Yeah, precisely. One of the factors in determining insurance premiums is the classification of the worker. You also look at the payroll. How much is an employer paying total their employees? And then you look at, you know, just the past history. Using that auto example, do you have a son or daughter that's been in 5 car accidents? So the business has a past history of getting injured workers. That's going to be factored in determining a particular insurance premium.
What are some of the common misconceptions about workers' comp?
Well, I think you touched on one, that it doesn't address all employees. So anybody that is employing workers in any capacity generally falls within a duty of workers' comp. So I think some of the classic ones would be, you know, temporary workers, someone you're hiring for a short period of time. You don't need to get a policy for them. Another one that used to be a continuous defense is that you hire a quote unquote an independent contractor. And if the person calls himself an independent contractor, then there's no duty to provide insurance for them, which typically comes into play when you're in the construction field. But there is a very specific definition as to what an independent contractor is. And they essentially are, they would typically have their own insurance. You can't just call somebody an independent contractor and not insure them if you're managing them, supervising them as you would an employee. So those are a couple of the ones that jump out to mind with me.
And for those who may have worked as an independent contractor or hired out as an independent contractor 4 or 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, California laws changed significantly in the last few years. The ability to call somebody an independent contractor is much, much narrower. You'd be well advised to get a legal opinion before you try to proceed on that basis. It could have some very bad effects if you don't do your homework. Let's move on a bit. Let's talk a little bit about responsibilities, both employer, we'll start with employer, but then eventually employee as well. What are some of the insurance requirements that an employer might have? Bart, the look on your face says my question wasn't clear. Let me rephrase it. Can you talk to us a little bit about employer responsibilities and insurance requirements? Okay, we have another audio problem. We've been having some problems tonight, so we're going to circle back to our guests in just a moment. While we're repairing that, let's talk a little bit more about what we're doing next week. Next week, we are live in our Montgomery Street studios with three phenomenal guests in front of a live studio audience. You are welcome. If you hear this broadcast, if you're within the sound of my voice, and you can come to San Francisco, and you want to join us, 220 Montgomery Street, KALW Studios. We will have a live audience when we talk about immigration with three phenomenal experts. From the East Bay, immigration practitioner Stanley Radke. Stanley has a wealth of information. You want to protect your employees? You want to know what you can do to help their status? And as I said earlier, we have two others that will be joining us. We have Bill Hing, who founded the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, and Carla Gomez from the Marin County Public Defender's Office. We'll circle back to next week's show later. You're welcome to join us. But we have our guests back. Let's circle back to tonight's show, Workers' Comp. And before you lost the audio, or before we lost the audio, as it may be, I was asking Bart to talk a little bit about employer responsibilities and insurance requirements. Does everyone that's employing people got to have insurance?
Yes. Short answer, yes. Everyone has to have a policy if they're employing, if they have employees or having people do work for them on a regular basis that isn't otherwise exempt. That's a pretty straightforward answer. Now, it used to be, as you were saying before, it used to be a little more complicated when, before laws changed classifying who was an independent contractor, but the laws have changed now in California. It's a pretty straightforward answer for you. Yes, if you have employees, you need to have a work comp policy protecting your employees.
So every employer has to have, has to carry workers' compensation insurance for every employee.
Yes, that's right. And that falls a lot into the, what we unfortunately see and where the unfair competition comes in, that carrying insurance, just like for our car and our homes or our apartments and renting, can be expensive. And some people, some companies we'll try and cut that corner and save a dollar or two to and not carry work comp insurance, or think that a general liability policy may provide the same protections. That's not correct. So employees should be covered by a workers' compensation policy.
So what does it mean when somebody fails to secure workers' compensation insurance? Somebody's not going with the program. What does it mean?
Unfortunately, that's where I would might be their first line of contact with the DA's office. It is a crime in California to not have a workers' compensation insurance policy when it's required. The violation of the labor code sections that just require you to have it. It's a pretty straightforward violation, or a pretty straightforward investigation when we go and conduct those kinds of cases. If we see workers working, or we have information that shows that a company or a person has employees and they can't provide their workers' compensation insurance policy in effect at that time, a company would be in violation of the law.
And if I can just add something on the charge itself, the fines are very steep. The minimum fine for a conviction of not possessing workers' compensation insurance is $10,000, if they're convicted of that offense, even as a misdemeanor. So there is a risk. It's a kind of a roll of dice, potentially, for those that are out there that are trying to kind of get that quick job done without insuring their workers.
So why do insurance companies protect workers in law-abiding businesses? I mean, why are we in this mandatory paradigm?
So the state of California, actually, when they enacted the workers' compensation system instead of laws, essentially realized very early on that there needed to be a system to create and enforce a complete system of workers' compensation. And they did that through legislation to support liability on the part of any or all persons to compensate their workers for injury or disability, or if there was to be a fatality. And that's irrespective of the fault of any party. So California saw very early on, and over the decades and, like the time California's been in existence, there's been a number of jobs that did result in injury. And we have been transitioning more recently with technology. But California realized very early on that there needed to be a system to protect workers injured in the course of their employment. So it's something that's kind of ingrained even in our California Constitution. It's not just a law, but it's a constitutional requirement and duty for employers.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Before we end the half hour, I want to talk a little bit about the investigation process. How do cases come to the DA's office?
We take referrals in when people call the DA's office or people walk into the DA's office. We have an investigator. That could be me. It could be one of my partners who is a law enforcement officer, who will take an initial report and then be turned over to me. We work with our local police agencies to educate the law enforcement officers through the county to be aware that not having workers' compensation insurance on the part of a company could be a violation that someone would investigate. And also we work with the state California Department of Insurance, who will take in referrals from through their website, through phone numbers. And then there's a process for suspected fraudulent claims or fraudulent actions to be reported electronically to both the California Department of Insurance and to the local district attorney's offices.
It's unusual, is it not, for the state to be handing over prosecutions of this type to the local district attorney rather than going through the attorney general's office?
In this case, this is how the system is set up. The California Department of Insurance has investigators who do fraud investigations criminally, similar to how the investigators in my office work. And they also have investigators who will investigate civilly and then prosecute through the Attorney General's office. But for criminal prosecutions, the California Department of Insurance primarily relies on the local county's district attorney's offices to act as their prosecutors. They don't have access to the Attorney General's office the same way some other state agencies may.
What's the role of the DA and the district attorney and investigator or inspector? Of course, the title can vary from county, but what role do you have in the system?
Yeah, the title varies. I most often describe myself to people I meet on the street as a detective still. So I will conduct interviews of people who are making the initial report, people who are complaining about violations of the workers' compensation law. I will take their statements. I will write reports. I will see if there's any evidence that can be collected, preserved, and then I'll coordinate with the prosecutor, so Mr. Fitzgerald in this case. I'll coordinate with him on what other evidence we may need to seek or how we will present that evidence in court if we need to. And then, unfortunately, sometimes we need to go out and at the end of an investigation, we'd be out making an arrest if we need to, or sending a notice to a person to come in and let them know that they need to answer in court for what's happened.
Let me take this call from Scott. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, I'm a representative with a construction labor union, and one of the issues that we encounter a lot is not just a failure to have workers' compensation insurance, but rather underreporting of payroll, and this can be on massive job sites, not just like your neighbor's backyard project. I was wondering if any comments about sort of both the challenges and the importance of trying to get employers such as construction contractors to completely and accurately report their payroll so that all the premium gets paid.
Sure, Scott. And we in the past have worked with different labor unions to ensure better compliance and make sure we're having access to job sites as available. One of the systems of violations that occur for any company who does have a policy to cheat the system, to cheat their policy, to cheat the insurance carrier, would be to lower the payroll, like you said. So if we hear a report of that, and that could come in any form, but oftentimes it comes into us from labor representatives through the insurance companies themselves, we will open an investigation and we will seek evidence to show what the true payroll should have been. And that evidence can come to us by way of search warrant. It can come to us by way of interviewing workers on the job site. It can come to us by way of reviewing other public documents. We're really trying to make sure that the workers are protected. And we do make a lot of effort when we are in the field speaking to workers particularly on construction sites, but any worker, to let the worker know the purpose for having law enforcement there. We are very cognizant that sometimes people don't want to talk to law enforcement in general, and that there may be reasons to not want to talk to us even more now, but we work hard to kind of set the boundaries of our discussion and make sure that the workers know that we're trying to look out for their best interests.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
I was the only kid there. I was like 8 years old, and I'm jazzed on sugar, and I am so nervous as he puts the actual shotgun into my hands. And I mean, I watched Red Dawn. I've got the basic idea.
Join us for more True Stories Told Live. Next time, Second Chances. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
The Moth Radio Hour this evening at 7 o'clock on 91.7 FM, KALW San Francisco. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Law Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. We now return to Jeff Hayden for Your Legal Rights.
And again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we're talking about workers' compensation fraud with two members of the District Attorney's Office from San Mateo County. We have Inspector Brendan Bartholomew and Deputy District Attorney Aaron Fitzgerald. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number here is 415-841-4134. If you're outside the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about workers' compensation fraud. You're not limited to the point where we may be in our conversation. Let's talk a little bit about the tools and techniques that you use when you're investigating these cases.
Sure. An interview of a worker or observations of work occurring is one of the most important tools we have. We expect that if an employer is wanting to cheat the insurance company and the insurance system in general, but that may also mean that they're cheating on their other documents. So we view those documents with a grain of salt and maybe a grain of suspicion. But we'd like to speak to the worker and really to understand the worker's perspective in what's happening and what's going on. We will go through items, documentary evidence, public records. We do searches for social media, online presences of the companies. And then we also engage with forensic auditors to help us review records that come in, that we were able to find and obtain. Look through bank records, look through tax records, look through any number of records, and really be able to quantify or get a sense of the numbers and have an expert in the area help us guide us so we don't have to be the ones just making that decision or making a determination on what is occurring.
Without talking about who you were investigating, can you tell us a little bit, give us a couple examples of some of your investigations?
Sure. One example that we recently settled was a construction company that claimed to have only one or two employees. The two principals of the company who were primarily in the office, primarily doing office work, were two of the employees, and they had one foreperson. They claimed to have no workers, no employees actually doing work. That report came to us after a worker was injured, and the insurance company questioned why a construction company that claimed to have no workers were had an employee injured. We also received reports of employees who are malingering or exaggerating. Those kind of cases come to us by way of the insurance company or by the employer who's trying to do the right thing and have a policy and cover the employees, but suspects that a person who was injured may be exaggerating, may be earning at a second job or second source of employment, which would be affect how much the company the person was hurt for would have to pay.
Now, we've all heard extreme examples like the guy that claimed to be out of work, laid up with a back injury, and he goes off to the gym and he's trying to audition as a pro wrestler. But give us some less juicy examples, things that people might not think about.
Yeah, we see cases similarly where employees are claiming to be off work or righteously off work for an injury sustained at one employer, but they have a side job and fail to disclose to the insurance company the secondary employment or the secondary source of income. Now, employee fraud broadly would be a violation of the law on behalf of, by the employee against the employer and the insurance company. In terms of other ways the employer fraud can occur, it could be the failure to insure that we've talked about. It could be the payroll underreporting that Scott brought up when he called in for us. It could be the misclassification schemes that we talked about, where we're saying that a roofer isn't really an office worker. But it can also come up where companies just change their name. Just the example that Aaron gave us earlier, where our auto insurance premium goes up after we have a history of fender benders. It happens to employer companies also. An employer does not have a good track record of providing a safe work environment. Their workers' compensation insurance premium will go up. Employers know that, and they will sometimes just change the name of their company or slightly modify the way the company name presents on a piece of paper, just even changing the spacing in the words or name of the company is enough for a company to get a new workers' compensation history rating, which would then potentially lower their premium. And the third group of people involved in the work comp system, providers of services to workers who are injured. We know there are stories from other places through the state of doctors who inflate their billing. We know there are doctors who are providing treatments or services that are not medically necessary to employees who are injured. And we know that there are attorneys in the field who are exploiting workers by finding cases or finding workers that may not need to be there, having options of that service.
What's the impact of all this fraud, whether it's on premiums or on taxpayers or injured workers?
Yeah, Jeff, it jacks up premiums, increases the price of premiums. It also affects the system when you have a lot of injured workers trying to schedule appointments through workers' comp doctors. So the system gets overstretched when you have people fraudulently misusing the system. It affects taxpayers as well, because not all companies insure their employees. There is a fund, essentially, is used to provide workers' compensation, wages, and treatment.
that pays for those workers that didn't have workers' compensation insurance. So it's ultimately affecting our communities. It affects the injured workers. Those that are legitimately were injured, we're trying to get a treatment. We have, in addition to the ability to potentially proceed with criminal investigations, there's a workers' compensation system that is designed to address workers that are injured. There's an appeals process. And sometimes we're seeing cases that are being litigated for years and years and years and years with potentially suspicious claims. Sometimes insurance companies have an obligation to pay and provide for their workers, even if there's sometimes some disputes as to the legitimacy of the injury. And it takes someone like a district attorney and an investigator to actually be able to enforce and get restitution back for our victims.
So, Aaron, why don't you get us started? Talk a little bit about the process of prosecution and how that goes. A little bit about accountability.
Yeah, appreciate the question. In terms of the standard for filing a criminal case, if you violate a law concerning workers' compensation insurance, if it's a criminal offense, it's the same burden of proof as any other crime in the state of California. So our burden of proof is can the charge or charges be proven beyond a reasonable doubt to a unanimous jury. So the overarching theme that I'm assessing is this case provable beyond a reasonable doubt, and is there a reasonable likelihood of conviction on these facts? In other words, will a jury convict on these facts? So it's strictly evidence-based. And thankfully, our team has a lot of experience, years and years and years of experience investigating crimes. So what I typically do is I work with my team, and I'm thankful to have three investigators and also a well-trained paralegal as part of our workers' compensation team here. And we are actively investigating and prosecuting cases throughout the county. So I want also to let Scott know that if we do receive evidence of a crime, we try and investigate as many cases as we can and make the best call we can on these cases given that burden of proof. But if you want to know nuts and bolts, I'll consistently meet with my team. We're going over potential cases referrals to our office and assessing whether or not a case is to be opened or not. And then we, through a number of different investigative methods, our investigators work these cases. Most of our cases are internally worked on through our office. We also work with the California Department of Insurance. And as cases are sent to us from them, those are also looked at. What I do is I get a case. I'm fortunate enough in this unit to look at the cases very early. In most assignments, the case is already essentially investigated by a police agency, and then it comes to the DA's office within a nice package. What we're doing is we're kind of investigating cases from the very beginning. So we do have a lot of we're getting the case very early on. Some cases will result in a prosecution and some don't. But I'll work with my team, and if we have evidence that someone has committed a violation of workers' compensation criminal statutes, we'll file charges. Once charges are filed, defendants are brought to court. They enter a plea, either guilty or not guilty. Generally, it's not guilty. An attorney is either assigned to them or they've retained counsel, and then we proceed to the criminal justice system. And we have several interests at play there. Why I got into this business and why we're doing the work we're doing is we want to be able to advocate for victims and protect victims. That's one of the primary, if not the primary focus of our office, is to be able to speak for victims at the district attorney's office. There's a lot of advocates for other people in the criminal justice system, but that's something at the end of the day, we've done our best for our victims. That includes restitution as necessary. Some of our victims in insurance fraud aren't necessarily maybe injured workers who are victims. We also may be dealing with employers who are being victimized. or the person ultimately paying out the money for the workers' compensation policy. So charges are filed, and we proceed through the criminal justice system with a mind of advocating and representing our victim.
So with workers' compensation, you're generally talking about money. Do you negotiate money payments the same way that you would negotiate a charge in a regular criminal case?
That's a fair question, and a question I think about sometimes as a prosecutor. I didn't become a prosecutor to engage in let's make a deal, and that's generally not. Philosophically, we're trying to make our victims whole. What is whole? We do our best to try and determine, when you mention money, what the loss is. Reasonable minds sometimes differ in a criminal case as to what that number is. But we do our very best to try and figure out what is the actual loss in this case and what can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So sometimes that loss, there is some dispute as to what the loss is. In those instances, what I try and do is I try and reach out to our victim, if it happens to be an insurance company, who is the one that was providing the particular workers' insurance coverage. I have a candid conversation with them. I indicate that, you know, sometimes the loss is very clear and identifiable, to the dollar and to the penny. But sometimes there is, reasonable minds can differ and argue. And I have a candid conversation about how the criminal justice system works, our burden of proof. A defendant's charged, I have a right ultimately to a restitution hearing to be able to challenge the amount of restitution, even if they're convicted of a crime. And then the judge will ultimately make a decision as to what that restitution amount is in many instances. So sometimes what we receive is we receive feedback from victims or insurance companies or attorneys as to what they believe constitutes complete restitution. So, I'll have a conversation with them. Ultimately, I have to make the best call that I can. We do consider victims' requests. We can't promise always that we'll agree with them. But if there is a clear dispute and if we're miles apart between us and defense counsel, ultimately, while the judge decide what the appropriate amount is. But generally, it's worked out without having a court having to make a decision.
What are some of the long-term consequences?
Well, in the case of felony prosecutions, felony convictions affect licensing in many respects, depending on what the particular crime is. So there's a set of crimes that would apply towards employers who are engaging in insurance premium fraud. There's another set of laws that deal with employees who are committing insurance fraud, but being charged with a felony could result in state prison and or county jail, depending on the nature of the crime. What we also look at typically when deciding whether to file a felony or a misdemeanor is, what is the amount of loss, like we've been talking about? Is there any prior criminal history? A one-time incident, or is this a potential suspect engaging in a pattern of criminal behavior, whether it be months, years, maybe over a decade? Culpability, have they accepted responsibility, or are they, we would say, in denial for what they've done? But the consequences of a felony conviction are severe. Firearm prohibition is a consequence of a felony conviction. As I mentioned, licensing issues, hefty restitution that's required, incarceration are some of the terms. With regards to misdemeanor offenses that we sometimes charge based upon the amount of the loss and some of the other factors that I mentioned, there are additional terms such as particular, there might be classes or educational components, fines, incarceration or some jail time. Depending on the nature of the offense, you might be subject to search and seizure and be supervised by a probation officer over the course of your probation. These are some of the risks that one faces. And the other thing that we notice sometimes in these workers' compensation fraud cases is oftentimes it's not just workers' compensation fraud. They're not paying workers' compensation insurance. You might be paying employees under the table. maybe engaged in other crimes as well, such as tax fraud or other particular statutes that also may get you into some trouble.
So in the last few minutes, let's talk a bit about the program as a whole and the impact and successes of the Workers' Compensation Fraud Unit.
Well, I appreciate that, Jeff. It's been a busy year, I'll say it that way. What I can promise to people here in San Mateo County is that we take pride in our work. We have a dedicated team who is actively investigating and prosecuting workers' compensation fraud every day. We also are trying to, where cases are not provable, it's not just filing charges to file charges. We're also making decisions on cases that aren't provable beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's just as important for us to be able to, acquit the innocent, so to speak, as to convict the guilty. So our job is to do justice, and sometimes justice is filing criminal charges. Sometimes justice is declining criminal charges in the interest of justice or because we can't meet our legal requirements, not just to check some boxes. So we are actively reviewing cases. San Mateo County does have a lot of business and employees. So we are busy, but I want people to know out there, and it's more also for educational purposes, that there is a system in place and also enforcement personnel here in San Mateo County that are going to try and get justice in our community.
But also, we could talk about concepts like justice, but even before it gets to that point, is there a deterrence? I mean, is it really in part to make it so that these fraudulent transactions aren't going to take place so often?
Yeah, that's exactly right. One of the purposes of sentencing in criminal law is deterrence. There's different theories and different philosophies as to what's the purpose of a criminal sentence. Rehabilitation is one component. The California Department of Corrections is the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. So we obviously want to be able to restore people and educate people as well and be able to get them on the right track with workers' compensation. That's why in some cases we actually will require a coursework to make sure they're properly educated.
But generally, when you're generally talking about workers' comp fraud, you're not generally talking about hardcore criminal folks that see themselves that way. I would think that the educational component here, it would be a much bigger component of what you do than it might be in the case of somebody who walks into a bank with a gun who is very aware of the criminality of their actions.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And what we do is each case is taken individually. Obviously, somebody that's hired a worker for one day on a job that didn't get insurance, and there are tools in place in San Mateo County where in essence, the book isn't being thrown at that person to the extent of if you have a complicated decade-plus fraud scheme where you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars or $1 million plus of loss, which is actual theft. So we certainly take a look at individual cases and an individual's background as well. So education is certainly a part of it, rehabilitation, as we go to the court process. But deterrence is also important as well to be able to let people know that there is kind of an investigative wing as well. So not only deter that person from doing it again, but also deter others out in the community. We take a look at each case and certainly mindful of kind of a full range of crimes out there. I've had the opportunity to be able to serve in a whole variety of capacities here. So I'm mindful that this is what some people may say, quote unquote, just theft to an insurance company. So I understand different people have different views on insurance companies, but this is harming more than insurance companies. I'm realizing longer than I'm handling this particular assignment. But yeah, we take an individual approach, and ultimately the courts are the ones after cases are charged that are determining the appropriate disposition in many of these cases or resolution.
Let's talk a little bit at the end. What would you like listeners listening tonight to take away from this broadcast?
I think we want the listeners to know that what their responsibilities are. That goes to the education and the deterrence. Unfortunately, there's plenty of work for us to investigate. There's plenty of cases for us to prosecute. We would rather have employers, employees, and providers of services working through the workers' compensation system to do the right thing, to be doing what they're required to do, so that we don't have to step in with enforcement, with investigations, and with prosecutions.
Do you also help through this kind of practice, help people avoid common pitfalls, kind of give people some guidance on where they should be going, what they should be looking for?
Yeah, I think the public outreach, trying to reach out and educate people is one way to address kind of the pitfalls. In terms of outreach, we try and do outreach as part of our team here, either speaking to various people in the industry or employers. For example, in the past, we have spoken to unions and others as well to educate members as well. We have on our webpage at the district attorney's office, we have a webpage that's devoted to insurance fraud with an insurance fraud contact form as well. So we are willing to speak to people as well. But it is a billion-dollar problem, billion with a B, that we have here with workers' compensation, and it affects the system and those that really need help are injured if the system is getting clogged with fraud. And I'm not in any way saying that everybody on workers' comp is committing fraud, by no means, but those that are gaming the system are affecting those people that really need the benefit of workers' compensation.
One last question for you both. Where can listeners turn to you to find information or perhaps report what they suspect is fraud?
Right, there's a couple of places. First of all, the California Department of Insurance has a particular, they receive for intake cases of potential workers' compensation fraud. Further, the district attorney's office here in San Mateo County, you can also contact our office. The main number for our office, let's see if I remember it here, is area code 650-363-4636. And if there's a particular complaint or a concern regarding workers' compensation, we can direct you to our inspector's bureau. Employers have an opportunity if there is suspected fraud. Normally, how employers are notified is they're being contacted by their insurance company if an issue arises. Insurance companies often direct a lot of their cases to the Department of Insurance and to us. That's how we get wind of the case. Also, any further questions, people here in San Mateo County are welcome to contact Bart or I as well. We can get you routed the right direction. May not be able to discuss all the facts over a phone call, but we can certainly be initiating a potential follow-up. And no promises on what we can do with a case. Each case is different.
Just to be clear, there are similar offices in many of the surrounding Bay Area counties where we can go for help. I really want to thank you both for joining us tonight, but we are out of time tonight. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, where tonight we've been talking about workers' compensation fraud, courtesy of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. We have Deputy District Attorney Aaron Fitzgerald and Investigator Brandon Bartholomew. Would like to thank you both for joining us. Please tune us in next week, where, as always, we'll answer your questions, but we're answering them on Tuesday. Thanks again to our guests and to all of you for listening. And at the controls, D Minor, I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and zealously guard your legal rights.